Welcome to my cozy crypt.
Welcome to the Crypt Keeper's Coffin, a Tales from the Crypt retrospective, brought to you by Bat and Spider. Episode 11, Three's a Crowd.
I figured I'd make it even more natural by doing it before you even stop talking.
It was awesome. It surprised me.
Yeah, it probably sounds like crap.
No. That was one of your better ones, I'd have to say.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Well, we're at it again.
I'm so happy with this idea. This is such a good idea.
Are you good?
Yeah. I'm reliving glory moments, you know?
Yeah, it's good. I haven't seen most of these, so it's really fun visiting these. I can't wait to like see ones that I've seen before.
Yeah, that'll be truly
special. Because I'm sure it'll be like a bolt of lightning, like, oh my God, I remember this.
I went ahead and since I didn't screenshot, I just used my cell phone to take pictures of the Crypt Keeper circa series release and then Crypt Keeper circa DVD menu. I'm obsessed with this son of a bitch.
It's nuts. We got to get someone on the case here. We need to know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I think when we keep putting episodes out like this, we're going to, you know, get integrated into the Tales from the Crypt fan community.
We're going to bully ourselves in. Like they're not going to have any choice.
Yeah, you're right. We're going to just be able to throw our weight around and
We're like a bad penny. We're just not going to disappear, and we'll always be there, annoying them, giving our opinions. I think you talked about the differences in the voices too. Like he on the DVD menu, he completely takes out all of the gravel of his voice.
Yeah, he does.
Have you noticed that?
I don't know.
It's like super. It's a clean Crypt Keeper.
It's almost like, you know, if they bring John back into the studio 25 years later to do the DVD menu audio, but nobody there is old enough to remember, and John just lies to them. He's like, yeah, this is how I sound.
This is what the engineers in the booth are like looking at each other, like weird glances. Yeah. You know, like, this is not the right voice. Should we say something?
Right, but it's John? The Crypt Keeper that you're...
Yeah, what are you going to do? He's the only guy
that's
ever done it.
It's like you can't even get a replacement for this like you could Mickey Mouse. You know, there's been obvious several Mickey Mouse voices since then, but...
Yeah, they keep replacing Kermit, and it's a total S show. I can't stand it. Like the newer guy they have, it's just like, ugh. It's like, that's not Kermit. It's like not even close.
I want to just like... slam my head in between a door opening and shutting when I hear Kermit's voice. It's that bad, Chuck.
I want to slam that puppet in the door. Sorry, that was too mean. I don't think like that ever.
Right. Just getting our sillies out for the show.
But maybe, what if it's like, after like working in the voiceover biz so long, like he started to have, you know, problems, and his doctor was like maybe he had to get like special training and he can't talk with that gravelly thing anymore, or else he's going to cause damage. Do you think, what if it's something like that? Like it's like a self-preservation.
It's super too real for you to talk like that, Chuck, but yes, I thought it's crossed my mind.
Suck all the fun out of this?
Like maybe he's got polyps or something in his little
trachea.
Oh
man. I'm sorry, John.
We're with you, John.
I mean, you obviously you didn't build that puppet, right. Unless you know, unless you did,
John. If you did,
maybe you showed up to record, and they're like, "Where's the puppet?" And then you had to like run to Michael's or Joanne Fabrics and cobble together a Crypt Keeper.
Right. I need your best Doc Brown wig, Party City. What can you do for me?
All we have is this Halloween spiderweb cotton stuff. Will that work?
It'll sure. Have to, I guess, right? And then gets like cocky with Party City. Like he's pissed at them.
Party City, you're not right. The only game in town.
I could go over to Throw Me a Party to support my local business if I need to.
Oh, God. So let's talk about this show. This is Three's a Crowd,
yes,
Dale.
It was.
This is about, I'm just going to ruin the whole story.
Right, I think
now,
it's the
okay?
best way to handle this episode.
This is about a really shitty husband and his toxic masculine insecurities as he goes on an anniversary trip with his wife and their third wheel rich friend. He thinks this third wheel is shtupping his wife. So he ends up killing them both in a drunken rage. But guess what? They weren't effing Dale. They were just planning a surprise party for him. And it all takes place in the cabin from the great outdoors.
You know, I forgot we talked about that last week until just now. And now I'm flashing back. I'm like, holy shit.
Oh, really?
Maybe this episode is better than
saw it in your eyes. It's not better. I thought the cabin was right. going to bring me more joy, but with all of this happening within its walls, that place should be
burned
to the ground.
That's true. If they would have maybe had that rogue bat flying around inside the cabin, maybe added a little bit of brevity, a little bit of lightness to this episode. Yeah, this episode was really shitty, man. It was just too real, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It felt like I was watching a snuff film of like a domestic altercation going down that ends in bloodshed. It was awful. It was like going over to like your friend's house and your friend's parents were like abusive and to each other. And like, that's like you're like stuck in this house with these adults who are just seem unhinged. And it's like,
yeah,
oh,
right.
God.
And you're just like pretending like nothing's wrong. And you know, you have to go to the fridge to get like a Coke or something. And you're just pretending like nothing is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the sake of your poor friend who this is their life, you know. They can't get out of this.
Absolutely right, Chuck. That's exactly how it was, man. It was just like by the end, and we saw the end coming. I think, you know, I can speak for you when I say the ending. We knew all along. I didn't know the daddy part, like the reveal that he was going to be a daddy, but I knew that it was going to be a surprise party.
I thought it was just going to be like a car, like there was going to be like a Lamborghini in the living room that his friend bought him or something. But
from the very get-go, just the jealousy aspect of it, they really leaned on a lot. And I'm very conflicted. You have to be like, you have to be confident in yourself, right? If you're spouse or your partner is going to have friends of the opposite sex. Like that's number one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they really lay into that feeling. And not to a good degree. Like this friend is all handsy. He's playing grab ass with her and making jokes about how she's the one that got away. Like, I mean, if that's like...
So, yeah, I mean... I can't like, I mean, this guy was an awful baby man, but like the way this friend was like touching his wife and like kissing her on the cheek, like it was just like, okay, all right. Like I can understand why he was feeling insecure about it.
Exactly.
It wasn't unfounded.
I wonder this friend, maybe he came into money, but I don't think he was a different person 10 years ago. It makes me wonder how the husband had kind of declined and changed in the 10 years because he was the best man at the guy's wedding.
Yeah. Was it 10 years they said? I was wondering how long it was.
Yeah, it was 10.
Because they seemed like they didn't, I mean, just the state of their relationship, it seemed like, and they didn't seem that old. Like, so 10 years is kind of shocking to me, but I don't know. Ugh, but man, I mean, this starts out and this main guy who looks like he looks like the proto Jake Busey.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't look like his dad, Gary Busey, but he looks more like Jake Busey. But this is Jake would have probably been like a teenager.
You absolutely nailed this. I was trying to place him. Yeah.
But he's got that look, right? But I don't know who, I don't know any actors in this one. This one is like without fame, I believe.
It's actually funny because the top three, I mean, they've been in a ton of stuff and they're still all working to this day, which is pretty amazing. This guy, the husband, Gavin O'Herlihy, was in Willow.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And he's in a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird vibe. The guy spent all his, the whole weekend drunk at this. And if they're going away for their anniversary, like if I'm the rich friend, I'd give them the keys to the cabin. I'd say, here, you guys go for the weekend.
Yeah.
Not the three of us go for the weekend.
I'm gonna go with you in every mode of transportation, the boat, the limo, and I'm gonna have my hand on your wife's knee the whole time.
And make you joke and make weird jokes.
And make weird jokes. Yeah, like,
but you know what? I've always regretted never trying harder to steal Della away from you. Just kidding, Richie. Come on, you know that.
But it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, we're making the rich guy sound like the a-hole, but man, this the husband, the main dude, he, like, there's no point where you, because it starts with him going through this emotional thing, like, I guess right before they leave on the trip, and he's just like, he's upset because the rich guy just bought his wife a new coat, and they just have this horrible argument. And he starts crying too to get her sympathy, but then they start making out, and then the phone rings and it's the rich friend, and he just slogs off into the bathroom and sits on the toilet to be a mope. It's the most pathetic set of emotions.
This poor guy, he's on that side of the feeling spectrum the whole episode. He is just frump.
You got to get yourself to a psychologist, man. Like 10 years ago.
And also, at certain point, their apartment would have been the envy of the late 80s, early 90s crowd.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a hotel room. That's how fancy it looked.
And even if it was, imagine walking into a house that looked like that now, and you would just be like, Jesus, I got to renovate this whole house. But at the time, it would have been the sharpest looking thing, like Beetlejuice's Winona Ryder's stepmom renovated that thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like I said, it felt like they were like in a super expensive hotel room. Like, I thought, because they were talking about this anniversary trip, I thought they were already on the trip. Based on the location. So I was like really confused when they go to travel.
That would actually explain, Chuck, why he was just downing airplane bottles of whiskey instead of, so maybe that was
Maybe it was a hotel room. That's right. Because that confused me even more, because I was like, well, if maybe it's not the hotel room, he's living there, but then he was drinking those little bottles. Look, this was a nice hotel. I'd like to stay there. That's what we're saying, basically.
If this hotel wants to hit us up, if the, the on-duty manager, the late-night on-duty manager is listening to us Saturday night post-release, they want to get in touch with us.
He's got his Snickers bar in his mouth, and he was reading the paper, and he just heard us mention him, and threw the paper behind him, and the bar, the candy bar is just flopping, and he's like, his hat's falling off. He's trying to find the phone. He can't find his own hands to do it, and, He's tripping over his own feet. He's got to call the boss. He just heard his name on Crypt Keeper's coffin.
And he's fumbling, mumbling, and he's like, somebody just came off the elevators with their shoes only slipped on, so they're bending the back of them. There's just heels on the back of the shoes, and they're just like the fake, like, not lobby store, but lobby shelf of goods is there.
Mm-hmm. And you have to ask the guy running the desk to sell you stuff, and it's like, it feels like it's beneath them.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to, like, we're talking about that guy right now as we speak.
So yeah, they go on this trip to this cool cabin, and the guy's like, I'm going to stay out back in this other separate cabin. and he asks his, like, weird man servant that lives there, like, if the special packages came, which further unnerves our husband. He's like, what is this, more gifts for my wife? Yeah. You a-hole. But man, yeah, he just, how about him downing all that alcohol?
Champion. Like,
I just keep picturing him with that clear glass bottle of, like, scotch or whiskey or whatever it is, just, like, downing it like apple juice.
Yeah, that was champion level downing.
Yeah, and we find out he's working as a bartender, not a insurance salesman, like his friend thought he was. And he's very embarrassed about that.
It's so funny how that could be so intimidating for someone to have to admit, but, like, for that to be a primary, like, did she tell you a bartending now, or are you used to drink?
I'm just a piece of shit bartender.
Like, okay. So, you know, it's temporary.
Relax. It's a fine job.
What's endearing
wrong with it?
Is the wife was totally like, it's temporary, it's fine. Right. Like, exactly.
She was cool with it.
I mean, Alan, please put your hand on my knee again, but you can be a bartender, husband, dear husband of mine.
So, like, things get worse. He's just so paranoid. He finds, like, lingerie wrapped up in his, like, wife's drawer. He's like, oh, this is more gifts from my shit friend. And he also has, like, a weird talk with the manservant guy there about women. And there's this weird line. He's like, the guy is like, I was married 3 times. It didn't work out. Because he said he was into free love. And it just seemed really out of place.
And then he equated that with being poor. He's like, look at me now. I have no money.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't deserve marriage or love because you're poor.
No. I mean, his boss is pulling in millions. It seems like he could probably afford
like,
to get
his boss, the handsy best friend was like pre-John Bernthal. If John Bernthal's like bottom lipped curled down like a cartoon character. Yeah. So I'm trying to curl my lip down now. He had the worst laugh in camera. That was his real laugh.
Oh, my God. There was a laughing competition in this episode, and I didn't realize it until I was pulling clips. The scene where the husband ends up shooting the rich friend with a crossbow on the stairwell. They have a little laugh-off right before.
Surprise!
It's not funny. The thing is loaded.
I loaded it.
I guess out of nervousness, he starts laughing too. And it's the weirdest couple of laughs. Yeah, it's like they were trying to outdo each
other.
It
was like Ernest P. Worrell trying to laugh. I don't know why I said Ernest. I don't know why I threw Ernest under the bus just now. It was mean.
We'll cut it.
Thank you.
Ernest doesn't deserve it. Man, I bet you he'll appear in one of these episodes.
Wouldn't that be great? That would be like the epitome of the time.
Could be.
Hey, we're putting it out there.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Tales from the Crypt Keeper, because Ernest P. Worrell himself, Jim Varney, might be on an episode of Tales from the Crypt. We don't know.
You know, I mean, Ernest wasn't always raking in the bucks, you know.
That's right.
Could have had to take some work, you know, take some Tales from the Crypt work. Who knows? So he ends up killing this guy and stringing him up on the wall like he's because the cabin has like deer heads and stuff everywhere. So he strung them up. And his poor wife comes in. You know, they're obviously like preparing the surprise party in the other cabin, and she got sick of waiting. So she comes in, she's like, yeah. Hey, where are you guys? What's going on? And so our drunk husband is like, obviously, you know, he's going to kill her next. And he's, you know, drunk and chasing her around. And she like runs upstairs, locks herself in the bedroom, but he gets in there and she jumps out the window in a nice,
whenever I see a scene like that, my body like physically like recoils. Like my upper body, I feel like this tense pain as soon as it happens in my chest, like involuntarily, because that's gotta, that can't feel good. Mm. Can't feel good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, they're really doing it. It's like, you know, I mean, it's a doctored window and right. probably like stage glass. So, but I'm sure it's not safe with all that splintering wood still, you know, it's, you know, and you're still throwing your body through something. Yeah.
How about your clavicle breaking in three places? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Do you ever want to try some of that candy glass?
Absolutely. Tastes sweet.
Yeah. Like sugar. They should. I'm surprised they don't like sell it like stage glass from Die Hard. And they put it in little lollipops. Like... You can eat it. covered in John McCain's McLean's
It's like the likeness of his feet blood, like candy wrapper painting version of it.
Yeah, it's like that. Is it like Amish candy? Do you ever get that? It's like it looks like broken colored glass.
You could
buy it
at the gift shop of the Shady Maple from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
the Shady Maple. Exactly. Maple smorgasbord,
or down at the Big M Saturday Market, you know, flea market. And then it just gets worse. And then he takes that stocking out of his pocket and just strangles his wife to death on the front porch. And it's like, it's not, there's like not even any comedy. Like we're making it sound funnier than this episode. Yeah, actually. Like there's no comedy.
Zero. It's no cuteness. There's no like some of the other episodes, Tales from the Crypta, there'll be like a little womp womp, like a little musical cue. There's nothing. There's nothing.
It's just all bad, toxic feelings all around. And the big ending, Tales from the Crypt ending, he drags his wife to the back cabin. And he opens the door and all his friends and family are there. And they yell, surprise! And there's like signs that say daddy because she was pregnant and he was going to be a dad. So there you go. Your feel good episode.
Yeah, right.
Ending.
And what's even, I don't know if we should even say it, but what's even more despicable is the implication that after he kills her, he's virile and ready to make that baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, what?
He kills her.
Yeah.
And says, let's go in the cabin. I'm ready to try for that kid again.
Oh my God. That completely passed me by.
Yeah.
I think I was so checked out because I just hated it.
Fucking.
I didn't even hear him.
Disgusting.
Oh my God.
Piece of shit. Yes. Yes,
holy
exactly.
Shit.
What do you, what?
Can we get this guy like a one-way ticket to the electric chair from episode one,
two
please?
People. Like, because... why did that need to be in the script?
Oh my God! Ugh, ugh! I didn't read the original story for this one. Mm. Now I kind of want to see what's up with that one.
I'm curious to hear your reconnaissance work on that.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that for next week. Maybe I'll remember to bring it up. but yeah, this is a, you know, another dud. Can't win them all. It's okay though. Hope springs eternal, like we always say. Yeah. So what's next week, Dale?
Next week's episode is titled The Thing from the Grave.
Mm.
When an abusive agent learns that a sexy model of a girlfriend is cheating on him with a photographer, he kills him and later kidnaps his girlfriend. But soon learns the love is more powerful than death.
Okay.
We got a star-studded cast this coming episode, Chuck.
Oh, really? Who?
Miguel Ferrer.
My boy.
Terry Hatcher.
Oh, boy.
Kyle Secor.
Who's that?
He was... He's been in a lot of things. To me, most famously, Jake Kane from Veronica Mars.
No, never watched that.
And other things.
Okay.
Other things, Jack.
But Miguel Ferrer, oh man. I once saw him in real life and I was starstruck.
Where did you see him?
I worked at a movie trailer company in my early 20s, very early 20s.
Amazing.
Where they cut, not like where the trailers that like stars stay in, but the trailers in front of movies. It was like this huge building filled with like producers and editors, and that's all they did was cut movie trailers all day. But I was just like a gopher, like a runner, just like run stuff around town. It was really fun. But sometimes we'd have like people like that come in probably to do voiceover work.
Oh my God.
So like, I remember the guy who does, I think the Brain's voice on Pinky and the Brain came in once. But yeah, Miguel Ferrer was there. I missed the day that Quentin Tarantino came in because he was like very hands-on for the, I think it was probably Kill Bill he was working on the trailers for that.
God.
But yeah, it was quite a job. Fun job.
That's pretty cool.
I'm sure I'll tell other tales from that, those experiences in the future. But
yeah, that's really cool. Wow.
Yeah. But Miguel, I mean, rest in peace, Miguel. I think he died a few years ago.
Yeah.
But I always loved him.
Was amazing.
Yeah. He's great in everything he's in. So cool. Looking forward to it. It's another Fred Decker, John, I see. Cool.
So there we go. That's it. That's the this week's episode of Tales from the Crypt Keeper.
Also known as the Crypt Keeper's Coffin.
That's what it's called. Keep me straight next time, Chuck. You should audio cue me, visual cue me to tell me to shut up.
I wish I had like a sign I could flash in your studio.
Stop talking.
Beep, 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 shut beep. Up. Okay, guys.
That's way better. Crypt Keeper's Coffin, by the way, way better title.
Thank you. I thought of it myself. All right, guys. We'll see you next week for another episode. Take care.
Bye.
See you next time, boys and ghouls.
Into free love.